This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. The Brasstown Carvers have been carving together for more than 100 years. Only a few remain, but they are bringing in new students.
The first carving night, I absolutely was clueless, and I didn't even know where to start. I could see what I wanted to do. I just didn't have the nerve to do it.
That story and more coming up this West Virginia Morning. Support for West Virginia Morning is proudly provided by Luke Frazier. West Virginia's U.S. senators brought home tens of millions of dollars in funding for projects statewide in a budget bill Congress approved late Friday. Curtis Tate has more.
U.S. Senators Joe Manchin and Shelley Moore Capito, both members of the Senate Appropriations Committee, each released a list of more than 100 projects that will receive federal funding from the budget bill. They include $12 million to finish a section of Corridor H from Wardensville to the Virginia state line, as well as $10 million to upgrade the water system in the town of West Union. They also include funding for a farmers market in Martinsburg, to upgrade the historic Capitol Market in Charleston, and to build the Capitol Sports Center nearby. Fire stations, communication systems, locks and dams, community colleges and universities, military bases, streets and sidewalks, courthouse security, and police cruisers will benefit from what used to be called earmarks, now congressionally directed spending. Manchin's and Capito's seats on the Appropriations Committee give West Virginia unusually powerful sway on where and how federal funds are spent. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Curtis Tate in Charleston.
The West Virginia legislature wrapped up its 60-day regular session Saturday night with a flurry of activities in the House of Delegates. The Senate, on the other hand, spent the last hour recognizing staff and shutting down 15 minutes early. Eric Douglas has more.
Back in January, there were predictions that the final day of the legislative session would be mostly quiet. It was last year. But that wasn't the case Saturday, as both chambers worked to amend or pass bills much of the day.
Senate will come to order. Those not having privileges of the floor will please vacate the chamber. Clerk has a conference committee report to file.
All told, there were nearly 2,600 bills introduced, while 280 completed legislation and have gone to the governor's desk. He has signed 38 so far. The remaining 242 he can sign, veto, or allow to become law without his signature. The governor has 15 days after the legislature adjourns to act on completed legislation. Despite bills that have been heavily debated all session long, the elephant in the room was the budget bill. Until about a week ago, the budget was on its way to getting passed early. But then it was announced the Federal Department of Education said the state might owe more than $465 million in COVID-19 relief funds back to the government. If the state has to pay even some of that money back, it could potentially blow a hole in an overall budget that is just under $5 billion. The Senate finally sent the compromise bill, Senate Bill 200, to the House late Saturday night. It includes a 5% state employee pay raise and a Social Security personal income tax cut of 35%, beginning a proposed three-year phase-out of that tax altogether. Some House members, both Democrat and Republican, complained of getting the bill with just an hour to go in the 60-day session. After much back and forth, funding for two initiatives identified Governor Jim Justice were set aside. Those included a tax credit to make child care more affordable for families and money for a new agriculture lab at West Virginia State University. The budget was referred to as a skinny budget with cuts to many programs. The legislature plans to return to the Capitol in May to add funding back to several line items once the federal issue is clearer. Throughout the session, social issues took center stage. There were heated and drawn-out discussions over teaching intelligent design or the definition of a man and a woman in state code through what the bill sponsors called the Women's Bill of Rights. Critics of that bill maintained it actually did nothing for women, but it would be used to discriminate against transgender West Virginians. The intelligent design bill passed before midnight, but the Women's Bill of Rights did not, despite the governor pushing for it. The leadership from both chambers met several times in private and agreed that each would pass a certain bill. The Senate passed House Bill 5105, which provides vaccine exemptions for children in public virtual school or private and parochial schools. Parents can opt out of having their children receive vaccines for diseases like measles and polio. Senator Mike Maroney, a Republican from Monongalia County, is a doctor. He called it a bad bill and an embarrassment for him and for the state. He cited his Hippocratic Oath as to why he couldn't vote for the bill. He said he pledged to first do no harm. He said he was certain this bill would cause harm. In exchange, the House passed a bill that changes the rules for collecting unemployment. Senate Bill 841 would broadly reduce unemployment benefits. However, it would increase benefits in the first 8 weeks, but it tapers off 5% each week down to 45%. It also reduces the duration of unemployment benefits by 2 weeks. The Social Security tax cut bill follows a law signed in 2019 that cut income tax on Social Security benefits over 3 years for the state's lowest earners. The proposal approved by the legislature Saturday would eliminate the tax for everyone else, also over a three-year period. The tax would be cut by 35% this year, retroactive to January 1st, and 65% in 2025. The tax would be phased out completely by 2026. Over the next few weeks, our new staff will be following up on other pieces of legislation that passed and how it will affect West Virginians. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Eric Douglas in Charleston.
This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:50. Becoming mostly sunny today, breezy in the east, high temperatures in the 50s. Clear tonight with lows in the 30s. Sunny skies on Tuesday with highs in the 50s and 60s, and partly sunny on Wednesday with highs in the 50s and 60s. The Brass Town Carvers have been part of the John C. Campbell Folk School in North Carolina since the 1920s. The group's woodwork has been celebrated, sought after, and collected. Today, only a handful of Brass Town Carvers remain, but they're still attracting new students and trying to shape a new future. Folkways reporter Stephanie Priscos has this story.
It's a foggy morning, and Angela Wynn is headed into the John C. Campbell Folk School. Angela works as a housekeeper here, but today she's at the school for a different reason.
Hey, buddy. Good to see you again.
Hi, how are you?
She's here to learn how to cut out wood blanks from Richard Carter.
I just cut boxes of patterns out.
Okay.
He's a longtime Brass Town carver.
Yeah, I've got to... Try to pick a piece of wood or get two or three hours.
Angela moved to Brass Town from Florida about a year and a half ago, and that's when she started learning to carve. She says she tried different crafts before, but this felt different.
I was instantly hooked.
Well, almost instantly.
The first carving night, I absolutely was clueless, and I didn't even know where to start. I could see what I wanted to do. I just didn't have the nerve to do it.
But she got some help from Richard.
He was very generous with his praise on my first carving. I look at it now and it was, it's pretty sad. It was a squirrel. I still have it. I laugh at it now.
There's a long tradition of whittling and wood carving in Brass Town, but being an official Brass Town carver is a special honor.
People want to know, you know, how quick can I get to be a Brass Town carver, and it's not quick.
Richard is 73. He grew up near the folk school and has been a Brass Town carver for almost 50 years. He says each aspiring carver has to complete a checklist of challenges to prove their skill and consistency. One of those challenges is carving least ones. These are tiny animal carvings that stand under 2 inches tall.
I'm working on a least one beaver.
Angela and Richard are sitting side by side, carving tiny beavers out of basswood.
That's probably making a real good sound there.
Even the rough outs are cute. As they work, Richard shows Angela some tricks.
Start by going off with the side, and hopefully these won't just pop out like some of the...
Angela says she's learned a lot from carving. including patients. That's something I can relate to on a personal level. I used to work at the folk school, and I attended the Brasstown Carver's weekly carving nights. I loved chatting with my neighbors while my hands were busy, but it was hard for me to see anything in the wood. I usually felt like I was getting nowhere. But Richard says Angela showed promise from her very first carving night.
You could tell, like I say, we watch people in here, and we can tell when they're going to be able to do real well, and she does real good.
For me, the joy is just finding the animal in there and making it my own, and it's surprising. It's just like a little surprise every time.
I know one of my great friends, he was here a month ago, and he took a bird home with him, and he brought it back last week, and it was a little gnome.
The Brasstown Carvers were started by Olive Dame Campbell in the mid-1920s, a few years after she co-founded the John C. Campbell Folk School. The carvers were encouraged to carve what they saw, typically animals, and they soon became famous for their realistic figures. Caroline Baxter is the folk school's craft shop manager. She says that the Brasstown Carvers program was part of Campbell's larger vision of an economic future for Appalachians that didn't require moving away from home.
One of her goals was to provide economic development for the carvers, give them a way to make money in the seasons where their fields were not being worked and they kind of had downtime.
The Brasstown Carvers sold their work in shops across the country. Travis Souther is the folk school's archivist, and he told me that in the 1930s, Brasstown Carver fame even reached the White House.
Some of those wood carvings were purchased by the President and Mrs. Roosevelt, and they were later given as gifts to a young lady who was living in England at the time.
The young lady? Future Queen Elizabeth II. There's a story you hear in Brasstown about a family that was able to purchase a house during the Great Depression with the money they earned from carving alone. But Angela and Richard say there's not really a way you could do that today.
It's only side money now. I would love to be able to carve full-time, but I'm not to that point.
These days, Angela is more than just a student of Richard's. At age 53, she's the newest official member of the Brasstown Carvers. Many of the carvers are in their 70s and 80s, so in a way, she represents a new generation of Brasstown Carver. And Richard and Angela recently received a Folklife Apprenticeship Grant from the North Carolina Arts Council to support her continuing training. Richard and Angela meet again for the weekly carving night at the Folk School, which is free and open to all. It's a place for experienced carvers to spend time together and talk shop.
I'm trying to finish off the details in the little ghost. He was roughed out, but I'm trying to smooth out the edges.
It's also a place for newcomers to try out carving. Richard says they really want to encourage young people to come.
We got a young one, 9-year-old, coming tonight, so hopefully he's excited to get into this. I've got a 6-year-old at home that wants to do it, but I'm trying to hold out on that for a while. I may give him a bar soap and something to let him work on.
As the newest Brasstown carver, Angela has some advice for beginners.
One thing I would say is just to try it. Don't be afraid. Don't be intimidated.
She says, just give it a shot. You never know what you can do until you try. For Inside Appalachia, I'm Stephanie Priskos in Brasstown, North Carolina.
That was Stephanie Priskos reporting for Inside Appalachia. To hear that story again, visit Inside Appalachia on our website at wvpublic.org. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University. West Virginia Morning is produced with help from Bill Lynch, Brianna Heaney, Chris Schultz, Curtis Tate, Emily Rice, Eric Douglas, Jack Walker, and Liz McCormick. And also Randy Yowie. Eric Douglas is our news director, and he produced today's show. I'm your host, Teresa Wills. This is West Virginia Morning.